Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Welcome, my friends, to the DTFH. Thank you for joining us. We've got a great episode for you today. My dear friend, Tate Fletcher, hit me up not that long ago and told me he had a new movie coming out, Kill Me Again. He told me he made it with Keith. Now, and that Keith and him were going to come and do a podcast. I didn't know he meant Keith Jardine, the famous UFC fighter. And so, holy fucking shit, suddenly I was getting to hang out with Tate Fletcher, Keith Jardine, who directed this incredible new horror movie, Kill Me Again. We talk about it in the episode, so I'm not going to bore you with the details, but it is now streaming. Won't you do all of us a favor and stream that tonight? It's really good. It's really spooky. And I think you'll see from the conversation with these two awesome humans that people like them need to keep making movies. So everybody, please welcome to the DTFH, Tate Fletcher and Keith Jardine. Keith!
Yes!
Tate! Welcome! Welcome, my friends, to the DTFH. Thank you for joining us. We've got a great episode for you today. My dear friend, Tate Fletcher, hit me up not that long ago and told me he had a new movie coming out, Kill Me Again. He told me he made it with Keith. Now, and that Keith and him were going to come and do a podcast. I didn't know he meant Keith Jardine, the famous UFC fighter. And so, holy fucking shit, suddenly I was getting to hang out with Tate Fletcher, Keith Jardine, who directed this incredible new horror movie, Kill Me Again. We talk about it in the episode, so I'm not going to bore you with the details, but it is now streaming. Won't you do all of us a favor and stream that tonight? It's really good. It's really spooky. And I think you'll see from the conversation with these two awesome humans that people like them need to keep making movies. So everybody, please welcome to the DTFH, Tate Fletcher and Keith Jardine. Keith!
Yes!
Tate! Welcome to the DTFH. I am thrilled to meet you, Keith. Tate, I love you forever. We've been friends forever. And I got to tell you, man, this movie you have coming out, it is so up my alley, and I am so excited to see it. Why don't we just start by playing the clip?
All right, man.
It's a gruesome scene here in the Heights.
Hey, could you turn that up?
It is still preliminary, but with the Midnight Mangler on the loose...
Oh, you can sit anywhere.
Mangler? Who comes up with these names?
Hi, can I help you?
Coffee. Just want to have a talk.
Hey, could you turn that up?
Is everything okay?
Do you ever get deja vu?
Every night.
Hey, could you turn that up?
No!
I'm caught in like this time loop. It's a record scratch that just keeps like... It just keeps repeating.
You can grab a seat anywhere.
Hey, could you turn that up?
You can just sit anywhere. Just sit anywhere. Just sit anywhere.
You put a shark in a tank full of guppies, what do you think is gonna happen?
You see my friend?
No. I just came to say hi and to get to know you a little bit.
Why?
I'm gonna kill you. Oh, shoot. Food's here.
Midnight Mangler.
It's a hell of a moniker. You didn't flush. What do you think, man?
Good? Catchy? What do you think he looks like?
We'll have three more beers.
Keep that cold. I'll be right back.
You really disappoint me. You're gonna let them break you.
I can't keep
doing the same thing over and over again.
Why are you here? I don't know. Yes, you do.
I'm God here.
Yeah. Kill me again. Groundhog's Day, but a serial killer. Holy shit.
Yeah.
So how did you write this? Did you come up with this?
I did every fucking thing, man.
When did the idea pop into your head?
You know what? I have a movie that studio wants to do, and they're about to do this. They covered the script, say we want to do this, and they're like, but who's going to direct it and who's going to produce it? Because it's clearly not going to be me. So we're during the writer's strike, and I wanted to squeeze something in. So I'm sitting down on my computer. I write every day. I'm thinking, what can I do? This high concept that I can do, like, cheap in one location and all that. And time loop. Yeah, time loop. I thought, I love groundhogs. I love time loops. It's interesting, man. I get into that. But then I thought, well, what if the Bill Murray character was a serial killer?
Yeah. And then, it's so brilliant because it's one of those ideas. It happens in stand-up. You'll see someone do a joke.
Yeah.
And for all of time, that premise was just sitting there for anyone to grab.
Right.
But somehow everyone missed it. And damn, man, of course, like a serial killer having to loop murdering people over and over.
And that's it, man. And that's exactly what I felt like. I was like, first of all, I'm looking like, I wrote the beginning and the end first, right? In the first few weeks, wrote the beginning and the end of it.
Yeah.
The end, you don't even know about the end. The end is like, it'll blow your fucking mind. But I cannot believe this hasn't been, it's so obvious that this has to have been done. I'm looking, it hasn't been done. Like, I can't believe this.
Yeah, it's
so simple, right?
It's so simple. Yeah. But, and also, I have to ask this, and you were there for the production of this thing. So in the show I did for Netflix, The Midnight Gospel, we did a time loop. And when we came up with it, we really weren't thinking about, well, how do you make a time loop episode? We really thought it would be easy.
Yeah.
And then somewhere like a week into trying to make this thing, people started losing their minds.
The logic of everything.
The logic. Yeah. It's a puzzle box. And it's so much more difficult than a typical linear movie. So did you, going into it, did you realize?
I had no idea.
Yeah.
You know, the middle is always the hardest when you get into the middle and the logic of everything.
Yeah.
This is happening this time, and it has to match up. And it's like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
That was something, man.
Oh my God, yeah.
But like anything done well, right? When you watch it, it should seem easy. Like, oh yeah, of course, that's no big deal. But no, you're right. It's cool that you say that because, I was losing sleep. I was struggling, man. It was, it was a thing.
Yeah.
Like, well, this is happening there, and then what's happening over here? Well, that was happening here earlier, and then you got to almost have like a paper of things, like a chronological.
So our animation director had a stack of paper this big, detailing everything. You know, with animation, it's even harder because you fuck up an animation. That's a few seconds could be a month of work that you've got to redo. Yeah. But it wasn't just that. It was it's an equation that everything has to work perfectly. One tiny thing out of place and it wrecks.
Like ringing the freaking bell. And then you get in the edit too, and that's a whole other process in the edit.
Oh, God, yes. I don't think people realize that.
Yeah.
We certainly didn't. But I was wondering, if you ever gotten into like Nietzsche that much?
I wish.
Well, you would love
it. I could sound smart.
Nietzsche. Well, it's number one, very useful if you're trying to sound smart. You could just mention Nietzsche like I just did because I want to seem smart. But he had this terrible theory. And his theory was that, and this is more of a thought experiment. I'm not sure he really believed it. But he talked about a mode of reincarnation where you're just looping your life over and over and over again, but with no change. In other words, there isn't even a possibility for change. In these Groundhog Day movies, the protagonist has some realization, grows like in any movie. And from Nietzsche's horrific perspective, nothing changes. It's just a looping record player.
Yeah.
There is no change at all. And he was saying this because he's like, if this is true, in the majority of your life you're not happy, you're in hell.
Yeah.
And if this is true in the majority of your life you are happy, it's heaven.
Right.
And so this was his explanation for deja vu. It's just like what you hit on here. I just was curious your thoughts on what movies like this are sort of pointing towards, which is not just we all get caught in habitual loops and live the same day over and over again, but potentially we could in a loop.
Yeah. And breaking out. Yeah. To me, that's what it was. And inspiration was all the things I said about watching the time loop movies and all that. But having just gone through COVID, where that was a great time loop for me, but it was a time loop. You know, I've been teaching myself how to be a writer, and I started years before that. But honestly, COVID was a gift because I spent like 8 hours every day just fucking putting sessions in, writing. Same thing, next day. What was that?
A lot of people say 8 hours a day. A lot of people are like, I have poured everything in. It's like he put into this the way he would put into fighting and training,
right,
is that every day he's at the same coffee shop with all with yep, all these inane little voices around of all these college students,
yeah,
chirping, and he's here focused on this thing, and he's writing for 8 or 10 hours a day, leaves for a half hour to go do some push-ups or whatever, comes back, writes another 6 hours, and then goes home, and then the next day is the same day. It's his Groundhog Day,
right,
in this deep dive exploration for since COVID. I mean, every day, absolutely, since COVID. So there's, to put it in perspective too, there's 4 or 5 different scripts that are completely done, that are full-length features. And then none of that fits into what we need to happen during this strike in this very small window of time. You've got to crunch everything into 12 days.
Right.
And so weeks before the shoot is happening, I'm going to write this thing here, and I know what it is. And it was phenomenal. Like, wow, under the consequence of pressure and time, of like, this has to happen right now. This is where this was born.
Pressure and time, most stressful thing I've ever done, true. And like, we didn't even have our SAG go until, we never got it because it just happened like days before. They just happened to release a strike. And I am stressing. I got this crew and everything ready to go. And I don't have the money yet. I don't have everything. Like, I just set this date and we're going. And by God, everything's going to come together and make it happen. And thank God it did. And I did my short the same way. I just set this date. We're going to do this thing. And like, it's crazy. Things just happen to come together, man. And
wow,
the movie is just seeing.
There's something powerful about that, I think, yeah, too. It's like, if you don't proclaim a date of the birth, then there's no birth.
No,
there's just palaver, right?
Right.
Yeah,
that's true. I mean, this is obviously it's fairly non-standard for.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook, you know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay Learn more at coda.com/tap.
A martial artist, an athlete, to transition into becoming a writer. I'm sure that's happened. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but that is sort of a wild thing. It's interesting that you applied whatever discipline you applied to learning how to fight to the creative process.
What you said is it, though, and it first started with acting, is like I'm trying to compete with acting and this movie business. Everything's far more competitive than fighting. Fighting's easy. You win, you keep winning, they can't ignore you.
Right.
But so putting the hours, so I'm trying to compete to be an actor. Like, I got to put my hours in on this, right? And then that turned into like, well, I want more complex roles and stuff, so I need to learn how to write. I'm a horrible writer, I'll tell you the truth. Like, I could barely write a business email, you know?
Right.
It took me an hour to write the fucking quote of what my thoughts on this movie were. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so I taught myself how to write. I know dialogue. I just worked with that. And I know what, I love movies. And it's just like the way I write is I write the movie I want to see. And like, and I'll just
and
beat
you know
it.
Stories.
I'll just beat it. I'll just beat it. I know stories. And I'll just beat it. And I'll just beat it until I get it. I'll just beat at it. And then like real writers do an outline and have the beginning, middle, and end before they even start.
Yeah.
And I just go from the character's point of view and I just beat at it until I finally get to where I want to be, until I got the movie I want to see.
Well, I mean, that's sort of like, you know, when you the people I know are writers.
Yeah.
When you realize how a lot of the work they're doing is just drudgery. Like, you have this fantasy of it being some kind of like beautiful, romantic, creative thing. And you realize like they're basically just digging ditches like every day. It's just like a grind.
It's torture, man, for those rare moments of like, like when I wrote the first scene to this and, oh, it's working. It's like the character's telling you what to do and you can't write fast enough and all that.
Yeah.
But that happens once in a long while. But,
right.
but that gives you hope for all those bad days where it's just like I'm staring at the computer and,
yeah.
I wrote one line the whole day and that. You know?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It's nuts. The muse. Yeah. You know, yeah. Right, Tate? Like,
it's the delusion that people see when they see a product. You know, like you look at a Nike and you can't unsee that Nike almost didn't happen, or FedEx or something like that, right?
Right.
You can't fathom that was a tenuous time that maybe it all fell into the chasm.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing here. It's like fighting is like, people go, oh, I want to see George St. Pierre under the lights.
Yeah.
And you don't know what 7 a.m. with broken toes inside the cage.
Broken
with five
toes.
Guys, you know what I mean? You don't know what that is, right?
That's right.
And it's like that thing. It's like, just move the dirt. And that's life everywhere. That's a transcendent quality of like, whatever it is you want to be good at. You want to be good at comedy? Yeah, I want to be Dave Chappelle. Or like,
yeah.
cool story. You're going to have to suck a whole lot, and that's
right.
going to be horrible. And your ego is going to tell you you're horrible, and you want to feel good about yourself. Like,
yeah.
There's all these things. And so it's just like, how do you fall in love with the work enough to get a product ever?
Well, this is I think this is sort of the mythology that has emerged from movies. Is like, God, what's that stupid movie with Lady Gaga? She's at a karaoke bar.
Yeah, yeah.
He comes in, sees her singing. Next thing you know, she's selling out arenas.
Yeah, yeah.
That is fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
It does not work like that. Like and I think what you were alluding to when you were talking about acting is, I remember my friend was telling me how as a musician you become successful, how there's politics, how there's campaigning, there's PR, how I remember seeing a documentary on Elliot Smith, this brilliant heroin-addicted folk musician, and somewhere in there, he's like on the phone with his publicist, and that's what it really is. You have to, this fantasy of like, someone hears your music and the next thing you know, you're a star. It's bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's just not how any of this stuff works. It's a grind. You don't, and honestly, God help you if you skip that part, because...
Yeah, but I think that's what it should seem. If you're successful, it should be like, oh, they just did that overnight. Like, you just wrote this thing and made a movie. You know,
simple.
No big deal. Yeah.
Just fell out of my fingers.
I think anything good seems simple like that, though. I've been thinking about this lately. Like, if it should... Everything should make sense. Oh, obviously, you do this. Obviously, in this movie, that happens. Of course, the twist at the end. That was obvious.
Yeah.
After you see it.
Right.
I got kids. And I'm always telling them, like, they're used to cars with no driver.
Yeah.
And I'll tell them, you know, to me, that's not normal.
Right.
You know, like there was a time when that would have actually, that would have caused police to show up. They think it's normal. And, you know, all of the, you know, generations of people were born into the internet, born right. into social media, born into this like hyper advanced technological civilization. And to them, it seems simple. Like, of course, there's the ability to instantaneously communicate with everyone on the planet.
Right.
That's normal.
Through video or whatever,
yeah.
live.
Yeah. That it's interesting because it's a double-edged sword. I mean, what are you going to do? Walk around all day in awe of the world that we're in and the backs, the many backs that it's built on. World War II. God knows how many people have just died, the kids ground up in factories, working in factories. I ever told my kid that the other day. I was like, you know, because he was watching, my kid's watching Vlad and Nikki. I'm sure you guys have no idea what this is. Shit parents know.
Yep.
Vlad and Nikki is, kids are obsessed with this shit. And it's just some, I don't know, I think they're Dutch. It's these Dutch fucking kids. It started off as a YouTube channel, these Dutch kids running around doing weird shit in their house with their mom. And one of my kids said to me, you know, Vlad and Nikki, when they ask their mom if they can go to a water park, their mom just says yes. And I'm like, that's because Vlad and Nikki's not real. Vlad and Nikki, you don't, and I was explaining to them, you don't see the takes in between when the mom's like, fuck you, Vlad, act like you're having fucking fun. Our future depends on this. And basically explaining these kids are being probably exploited. Yeah. There'll be laws against this in the future. And then kids
we're going to see their drug problems later.
But the point is, we're just, exactly, we're standing on the backs of people who made it look simple.
Yeah.
And no one seems to realize that everything around you is a result of somebody busting their fucking ass, failing, losing, dying. So, but I agree with you. Like, nobody wants to see the.
Everybody wants a hack, though, right? You look at like what? Oh, I'm a biohacker. Everybody wants.
Yes.
Like, okay, here's the cake. Here's the line to get the cake. I want to run around here somehow.
Right.
And that's the delusion, everybody. It's like when you bring up Nietzsche, like a drunk, right?
Yeah.
Like, and so you think about like, why do you think you're in a time loop? Well, because I'm attached to this thing in my life that rots me.
Yeah.
And I don't understand that because I think it's nourishing. I'm in a twist of what is real and what's not real.
Right.
And so everybody's kind of in that. And like at the end of the day, I think when you distill all this stuff down, it's like, what does self-development look like? And if you're not attached to self-development as the final outcome, there's no movie at the end of that. There's no anything at the end of that because it's all self-interested.
Right.
And when you start to get out of, I think there's something top down about that. That like, what's the most, a kid asked me this guy that wanted to be an actor. And he says, what do you think the most important thing that I do is? I go, that you heal. Mm-hmm. Right. And if you're not looking towards your healing at a certain point, I don't know what the vibration is that you can create on that's not chaos.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Exactly, man. Yeah, sure. The problem with that, what you're saying is, and this is also a problem with movies, they have to have an ending. I mean, you know, I don't have time to do it and I don't even know how I would do it. But I want to see the next 2 hours after a porn shoot. You know what I mean? So the movie starts with the end of the shoot and then carries on through the rest of the day.
It's the darkest movie ever.
You know what I mean?
This is great.
Yeah, like, or the, you know, the credits roll in a rom-com.
Yeah.
They're at a wedding, birds are flying, everyone's happy. Let's cut to 2 years later.
It all ends up as The Wrestler.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's
Showgirls, like
which is a prequel for the Whiplash, if you've ever seen that.
Right.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Whiplash is amazing, man. It's about a drummer that sacrifices his whole life to be good at this one thing and all that. And to me, there's nothing that equates more to fighting or whatever than this movie.
Right.
But it's supposed to be, what's weird about Whiplash, you haven't seen it, but it's supposed to be, I was listening to a thing from the director, and it's supposed to be a cautionary tale about being over-devoted to something and all that. And like, it was supposed to be, you're not supposed to do this. Like, well, no, this is how greatness comes, man. Like,
right.
This is how we got our great musicians, our great artists, our great anything.
It's true.
Just selling out their lives, selling their soul to the devil just to do this thing.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, my God, it's true. But the cautionary part, I guess, is that, I mean, watch any music, behind the music documentary, right?
Yeah.
There is the former god, whoever it may be, they were on stage. They were like sex symbols. They were like probably channeling like spirits. Who knows? And now they got a little tremble in their hand. They can't remember much anymore. They're like confused a little bit. And that's the cautionary tale, is it's like the problem is it can't last. And so, yeah, maybe that version of you, that version of you is a legend, but now what?
That's what why I keep, and me and Tate talk about this, just keep recycling. You talk about rebirth and Groundhog's Day and keeping life like you're a teenager is like I'm a teenager now, still dreaming to be a movie director, a movie writer, you know?
Like, right.
I transitioned to from what I was doing to become a fighter, from fighting to acting, from fighting to be a movie maker. And it's just like, just a complete rebirth, and it's a complete like sacrifice as far as your finances go and everything. And it's like, everything's insecure, you know, and that, but just to be able to do that and still be able to be a child like that, you know?
That's a huge part of it too, is like believing that, because people look at that, they look at a product and they go, oh, well, they had this going for them, that going. It's like, no, you have to conspire to allow a space for that to happen that you don't know how it'll happen.
Right.
There's that, and that's that we were talking about yesterday about like the Wright brothers flying, and like, and like they said the greatest mainspring of their accomplishment was this childish faith.
Right.
Right? That they had, which is what? Which is like, of course Superman flies. Of course if I get the tops of garbage cans, I can fly off the garage.
We don't think, right? You were talking about that earlier. We don't think about this, like to fly an airplane, like that was like a stunt. Right. You talking about the reporters. Yeah. Like, I can't even report on this because like nobody would believe me.
Okay, check this out. Can you, Val, can you Google attempt to fly off the Eiffel Tower? Because the Wright brothers get all the credit.
Yeah.
But there are lots of people trying to fly, my friends. Lots of people.
Yeah.
They didn't fly.
What's his name drove right into the Potomac River? There's all the failures.
Was it the
attempt to fly off the Eiffel Tower? This guy thought he'd figured out a way to basically, like, he'd sort of come up. Yeah, look at this. He'd come up with an idea for a wingsuit.
Took control.
Yeah.
Went solo.
Yeah. This shit is. But again, when we're up in an airplane, we're not thinking about the people who sacrificed their lives. Let's just see if you can find the video in there. Because it's a death. By the way, anyone who's horrified by death, you should understand. This gentleman with a beautiful mustache here, thought he knew. Look at this thing. Go ahead, click that. So this motherfucker thought that was going to help him fly. They didn't know. Look at that beautiful mustache.
Well, I would have tested it on the garage first before I went to the Eiffel Tower.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, you could probably bet that guy doesn't have a lot of friends. You know what I mean? Because your friends are like, dude, that's not going
to
work.
The belief in yourself to make this step, that first step. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Look at this. Go ahead. Get to the jump. I mean, that's it.
That step. That right first there. Step into anything is always the hardest.
They should show this.
Oh, there it went.
Bye-bye. Didn't work.
Well, he moved fast.
Shit.
You know what I mean? Like, so that's the real truth about it, is like the though it's like you guys are examples of, you know, the on what happens on the other side of transformation from one thing to the next, and good examples of it. But also the reason it's thrilling is there is no guarantee. Yeah,
right.
Just because you try to go into some new chrysalis, melt yourself down, turn into a different type of creature. On the other side of that, you might just be some melted pulp. It didn't fucking work.
Right.
There is no guarantee. But to me, it doesn't matter. I think even if you are some pulsing, like, I don't know, remember The Fly?
Yeah.
You go, God, when like the Brundle fly, even if you do turn into some rotten thing, if you didn't quite pull it off, who gives a fuck? You tried. This guy's better than any of us.
Right.
This son of a bitch believed in himself enough to jump off the fucking Eiffel Tower. Did he make it? No.
But the thing is he's part in a string of what success happened later, right?
Yeah.
He maybe was an integral part that had to happen.
Right.
In that.
Something that's been helpful for me is from fighting is this old samurai thing, seek death, right? If you go into a fight with wanting to win at the end, like the samurais, they hand down doctrines to their kids and all that, and it's all written down about their advice. And like, you should go into a fight, like they want simultaneous death, but to go seek death, find that good death, because if you're trying to win, then you're thinking about that the whole time. And so that goes with everything, like seek failure, man. Like with actor,
seek
like
seek death.
Yeah, yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah, that should be the name of this episode. Seek death. Nice. No, but for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, this in Buddhism, the term for this is abandon all hopes of fruition.
Yeah.
Meaning, if you're getting into this with some like goal of enlightenment, forget it. Because that the moment you let go of that completely, that's when you can actually access the present moment.
It'll always be disappointing too that the end, when your goal is that and you get to the end and it's like, I've been around like Rashad Evans after he won a championship, the most depressed I've ever seen him, you know? Like,
there you go.
I've
heard this story that, you know, in the old days, the comedy landscape obviously has changed massively, but in the old days, you could upload your stand up to YouTube and maybe that would get asses.
You were yelling in an empty room.
Yeah. That's right. And you had to get on the Tonight Show. You had to. Like, you had to get on something where people could see you, and then you were set. But they say, post-Tonight Show set, you were invited on the couch. The next day, your phone is going to be ringing off the hook. You're in your hotel room thinking about putting a fucking gun in your mouth.
Yeah.
That you got to the top of the mountain, and now what?
Yeah, now what?
Yeah. Now what? You're still in a goddamn hotel room. You're still by yourself. You're still a person.
Isn't that the problem with looking for, like, I need a result instead of just being in the activity?
Yes.
Right? I fall in love with the process, not have an end in the result. If I got an end in the result, that's heartbreak. And also, it's like, it's such an ego-driven thing that I have missteps along the whole way. And I think this idea of seek death is like, if I throw all myself into it, because this thing's going to end anyway, do I not want to have tried as hard as I could? And then the next thing unfolds, and either this comes then in, for me into faith and going, have I not been carried this far?
Right.
And if I try with this kind of fervor, tenacity, enthusiasm, does not the next thing also offer a whole lot of, it's just a different class in life school.
That's right.
Right.
You know what you said reminded me, I haven't thought about this in a long time. I don't talk about this fight enough, but when I fought Chuck Liddell, I remember I was running, I was doing like damn sprints or something, and I was in the middle of the sprints, and I was thinking, like, what if I was going to die in 2 weeks? Like, this fight's happening in, like, a week. What if I was going to die in 2 weeks? Then how important is this fight? And, like, what would I want to say, like, on my deathbed? Like, what did I give to this fight? Did I just, like, show myself and give everything? Or was I tight, you know? Like,
yeah.
And just that idea helped me out so much, and it goes with everything. What if you're going to die here pretty soon? Like, how would you want people to remember this movie?
Yeah.
Did I give everything I got to it, or did I play it the safe way?
That's it. Have you ever read Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl?
Actually, I have it on my list.
You will love it.
Yeah.
But one of the things he says in there is live every day as though you were on your deathbed and had been given the chance to go back and not make the same mistakes. Yeah. And dude, I only have one. First of all, I'll tell you about the time I fought Chuck Liddell. It was bad for me, like really bad.
It didn't,
he threw me into the wall. Huh. It really, I don't want to, it's another podcast, but I got one of my balls cut off. I got ball cancer. And I can remember,
I'd rather fight Chuck Liddell.
No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't. Because, like, when they cut your ball off, you're asleep. When you fight Chuck Liddell, you know, you see that. You've seen the look in his eye. But it sucks. But I remember.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Suddenly having like true confirmation of my own mortality. I remember suddenly, like, you're waiting for results. It might have gotten in your brain. You don't know. And I remember that moment of like, oh, fuck. I really might die pretty soon here. Yeah. And that was the birth for me. And that was when I became a human. That was when suddenly it's like, oh, shit, I'm human now. And I'm I don't want to say fucked up. But like my wife, you know, she likes to plan way out. And ever since I had to contend with my own mortality, it's harder for me to do that. It's hard for me to think really far ahead because I know how quickly things change.
I don't even think that's the way to live. I mean, that idea, that sense that I'm in control of this bitch is insane. And yeah. to let it unfold, is that not always a better result is what I think. I remember when you were getting interviewed about something and you were talking about this on the patio at the Comedy Store. And you were saying, yeah, this lady, she wants to talk to me, or she did talk to me. And she's saying, you know, as a cancer survivor, and you were revolted by the idea and thought that that's what my life is distilled down to.
Yeah.
And that could be almost like any of these events, though. This movie is not his life. Like, it's like all of these things is like, it kind of robs me of who I am to go. Oh, and that's the thing about being on TV or being a fighter or being what, like, you get stuck in categories, and that's not who you are today of what you did yesterday. That's not, you know, it degrades kind of the rest of your own humanity.
And
this idea about moving forward with it. It's like the Tonight Show. I got here and now there's a result. It's like, no, there's your whole life. It's like, oh, I got a SAG award or I got a, it's like that doesn't, it's inconsequential.
Well, you guys are both similar in this way. Like, what the fuck are you guys? You're some kind of crazy hybrid something. None of it makes much sense. being a fighter is already like insane. That's an insane job. Like, that's insane. That job doesn't make sense. But it's an old job. It's maybe one of the oldest jobs. And then
it's just a different kind of horror.
I think it's really similar to a lot of things, like probably wanting to be a comedian and wanting to be a vocal star, a music star, or anything. Like a lot of us, like, we come from humble backgrounds, right? Where we just want to prove to everybody that we're something, right? And for us, especially the way we're built and all that, well, that's fighting, right? Like if I can go in the world, say, fight in the UFC and beat some people up, then people will respect me. Then they'll know that, like, I've really made it. I'm worthwhile. I'm something.
Yeah.
And that becomes your identity a little bit, which is another thing where this had to really break me out of that because, you know, I'm really something. I was a fighter. I did big things. So that's my whole identity. That's it. It's super shallow, right?
Yeah.
So there's two sides of the thing.
From people.
Thing.
Yeah. To have done something really hard. It's like, well, who am I under these conditions, these austere conditions of like being in a cage in my underwear and I might get dominated or something in the most primal way possible in front of a public
naked
crowd, right?
In front of millions of people.
It's like, that's an insane idea. Yeah.
Well,
you overthink
you should it. Talk,
like,
you, sound like you should talk to my dominatrix. That's as close as I've ever come to that. I'm so sorry, you guys. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But the idea, too, that like you're in this warrior class or something, then you look at people in line at McDonald's, you're like, fucking just drive off a cliff, like you, and so then the only people, and so then to come out of that and go, oh, this is not what this is either, and who am I now without? If I get reductive about it all, and there's no family, there's no kids, there's no wife, there's no job, there's who am I when I get up in the morning and put my feet on the ground? Yeah. Like, who are we going to go be today? And that's a different thing all the time.
And that's what I'm working on. That's the other side of it. That's what I'm working on. You're talking about living like if you're on your deathbed, like, what did you do today? Well, I spent all day in a coffee shop working on my script. Like, well, I wasn't hanging around with family. I wasn't doing these things. So it's like trying to find that balance, right? And that's what I'm dealing with right now, too. You know,
I think one of the biggest things about that, too, is like when we're in taxi cabs or whatever and talking to drivers, or like, it's like, I try to bring that and I don't do it well, but like to get into this perfection of being interested in other people and being as kind and as like, cause you do walk in looking like this and you're like, do I set a room at ease or are people on edge now? Like, how can I bring a comfort of something into something that people weren't expecting, right?
Right.
And that's what
because you guys come in a room and people are like, whoa, fuck.
We were joking on the way over here, like we're talking before we come here, like we're getting plane tickets and like Southwest, right? If I'm sitting on the aisle, like I don't have to worry about anybody sitting in the middle seat next to me.
Oh no, you don't. Yeah. You can do whatever you want. No one's gonna say shit.
The whole plane will fill up, and then the last person will be forced to. All right, I guess I'll sit there.
So like, every seat is taken on the plane. Just take a middle seat, and people are like, oh, okay.
You know, man, I was sitting on a plane. And this dude,
I want to sit next to you.
I don't want you to sit next to me.
You're not taking up too much space.
I'm sitting on a plane. This dude's legs are pushing into me, right? And he didn't mean it or whatever, but you know, I'm like, dude, can you move your legs, please? And then I notice cauliflower ears. Oh. I'm like, oh, motherfucker, this guy's some kind of...
You said something, though.
It was too late. If I'd seen the ears, I would have been a pussy. I didn't see the ears. If I'd see the ears, I probably would have been like, oh, just deal with it. I'll choke you out, man.
So funny.
But yeah, I mean, this is, again, like, this is what's fascinating. I mean, I remember, like, when you started showing up in movies.
Yeah.
I'd be watching a movie with my wife. And like, that's Tate. What the fuck? You just suddenly it happened. And I think there's a, like, anyone who wants to get into acting, it's already hard. Yeah. But to get into acting, I do feel like you're up against something extra because people are like, what are you? You can't act. Yeah. You're a fighter. You don't know how to fucking act. What are you going to do? You're not going to be able to do this.
We both had to kill that, man. And we turned down roles that relate to fighting, all that stuff.
I'm sure, because that's probably all you're going to get offered is like mercenary roles.
Yeah, you look the bit. And if that's all you offer is what you look, I mean, and so that's the other thing is like, how do you engage and present yourself in a way that it's your full self? And then you got to ask yourself the question, well, what is my full self then? Because I've just been doing this thing.
Right.
And so like this, you know, it is, there are all these like sheddings that happen about, well, who am I today though? That's different than it was last week.
Yeah.
Whatever, right?
But you're talking about that. And people think, oh, Tate was a fighter. And then all of a sudden now he's in all these roles because he looks a certain way. And because of a fighter, no, he made himself super valuable to whatever production he's on. And he did that work, you know?
Yeah.
But, oh, okay, let's go way back. So something happened to both of you where most of us, where we give up, you guys didn't give up. What's that moment?
Don't what was the thing we said right away? It's like, don't let your memories become larger than your dreams.
Cool.
Yeah.
After a while, I think too, in life, whether it's in relationship or in what, like, you're like, I already know what it's like to quit.
Right.
What would it be like if I stuck around?
Right.
What would it be like? And now what would it be like? Not if I just stuck around. What would it be like if I really tried?
Yeah.
What if I really believed in myself? Those are that for me. Those are growing things. I see guys that I know that are like, they're just confident. They love it under the light. Like little John Dotson is a guy built for the life he has. Right.
Right.
And with for me, I'm kind of shy and reserved and all that. And like, and so it's different in that way. I think it's a growing process. I don't know that there's one event.
I had a conversation in my late 20s when I was dabbling in MMA. And I was starting to win grappling tournaments and all that stuff. And like, I think I'm going to give this a go. And then I started thinking about my history of playing college football and whatever. And like, have I ever really given 100% of myself to anything? I'm like, I haven't. So what if I give 100% of myself? Like, I gave up my hobbies. I gave up my motorcycle. Yeah. I gave up everything at that point. And I'm just completely focused on fighting. And then things started happening. And then so that I just pulled that into everything else. Yeah.
How did your parents react to you guys when you, like, how are your parents involved in this? This is interesting to me because I'm a father and I'm curious, like, do you have any moments you remember with your dads that, like, helped you or did they hinder you?
Real quick.
Yeah.
Keith, can I ask you to move the mic either left or right? Because I want to see your face a little bit more. Like, yeah, there you go.
Oh, we're right there.
Okay, perfect. Hi. Thank you.
All right, right there.
Oh, right there. Hi. Actually, I'm an actor. I should know where the cameras are, right?
You're off the clock. It's okay. Yeah,
that's kind of like walking into a room and knowing where all the doors are.
Yeah. Talking.
Okay. I've got such a nice relationship with my dad right now, and I'm really grateful for it and all that. But we were disassociated for a long time, and then I know too when I did hear murmurings like from people that were in common, he didn't like it. Like, but also it was better than where I'd been. Right? It's right. Like there was. I mean, I had a colorful background that he was not happy with. Also, my mom. Who, when my mom and dad got divorced, she came out to New Mexico to be near. And she's like, I just want family around, and you're separated from your previous life, and everybody goes one way. And so she didn't have a lot of friends, and she just wanted to recreate a life. So she came out and moved to Santa Fe. And when she did that, she'd take grappling classes. She's like, she goes and tries jujitsu, right?
Yeah. That's
and
wild.
So she'd probably done, I don't know, 10 or 20 jujitsu classes, yeah. Right? And so she's like, what is this you're up to? And she's like, oh boy, that's hard. Even when you're just sitting there, it's like you're expending, like she wants to have an idea. She's an artist, and she wants to have an idea of like, what is this that you're so enamored with?
Right.
And then she would go to fights of mine and stuff. And she doesn't want to see any of that. She loves me. And we've had a great relationship, you know?
I take my kid to jiu-jitsu, and let me tell you, as a dad, and the class he goes to is great because they put him against bigger kids.
What schools he go to?
Don't ask me that because I can't remember the fucking name. Delete that so I don't look like a shitty dad. You know I can remember. Hold on. No, I can't say. Actually, I don't want people to know what class my jiu-jitsu
Of course. That's true, too.
But he...
What's the name of his teacher?
I can't say that. Why don't I give you my address? Why don't you tell what school he goes to?
You have a bumper sticker on your car?
Epstein list.
What about his doctor?
Social Security.
Is he vaccinated?
Of course. We have them vaccinated every day. I just got revaccinated. Thank my God. 19th booster.
We did on the way up here.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah,
you're safe.
I just love the way it feels to get vaccinated. You just feel safe. But
you just feel safe.
No, it's hard to watch it. You know, the thing is, like, it's tough to watch your kid. Because you're either, like, it's hard to find a balance. And either the kid is, like, you know, winning. And there's this part of you that's like, hell yeah, watch my kid ravage a 5-year-old, that's not a good thing to watch your kid to be happy. But then you're also like watching your kid fail, and you know that's the only way it's getting better.
And you know you could kick that other kid right off of him.
I do sometimes. Yeah. I just get up and punt the fucker and then run out. but it's a tough thing to watch. But so, famously with comedians, if you want to make a great comedian. Ignore your kids. You're going to get a great comedian, but
not always.
You're going to get a serial killer.
We know some,
but it's a good way to make either a sociopath or a funny sociopath. Yeah. But do you guys have any memories? Like, I hear you with your. I know about your colorful past, but do you have any memories like where your folks sort of transmitted some of this stuff that you have grown into the lives that you have right now?
You know, I lived half my life with my mom, half my life with my dad, my early life. The first half, my mom was never really well, and we were always like the poor kids in town, you know, like the welfare family and all that. Mm. And she wasn't really well. And I don't know how this transitions, but one of the most beautiful moments in my life was my last fight in the UFC. I fought a guy named Matt Hamill. And that's the first time I got my mom to come to a fight, like, and so I got her, and Dana took care of her. She sat ringside and all that.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a great moment. And she was super proud. It was a really war with Matt. Like, I don't know, I had a real problem with that fight. Like, it was a split decision. I lost it. It was bloody. It was rough. It was like whatever. And I just remember coming out of the ring and seeing my mom there all covered in blood. She gave me the biggest hug. And she's like, I'm so proud of you. Sorry, I'm so proud of you and all that. But yeah, so.
That's cool.
To continue the story, that was on a Saturday. And on Monday, she passed away. But I think it was like I think for her, like, that was like such a big moment. Like, like she wasn't well, and like that was like, okay, now it's okay, you know, now it's okay, now I can.
Like, so, yeah. Like,
me and my sister, we weren't really sad about it. We're of course sad, but we're just like, this is just the way she wants.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
And then the UFC cut me the day later.
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah. Anyway, it was fight of the night, all that stuff.
It's not a great month, man.
Yeah. My dad, I come from a really super, like I said, my dad's super blue collar and all that. And he doesn't understand what I'm doing right now. He doesn't understand what it's like to, he's a miner. Like, I'm not in the mine. He'd be so proud if I was in the mine working every day, coming home all dirty and all that stuff.
Right.
And that's real work. And like, he doesn't understand when I say I'm going to work.
Right.
I'm going to write. I'm
like, sure.
His dad's one. He's got hands that he could palm my head and pick me up. He's this huge, powerful, really smiley, loving, gracious guy. Yeah. And who's worked in mines his whole life.
Did you ever go down in the mines?
Oh yeah, I worked in a mine before.
You've worked in a mine.
Yeah. I spent one summer. I was in the college. Okay, you talk about story. This is one of my favorite stories. Dad was working in a mine. They're reopening a mine. It's an underground mine, and the hoist is broken. So you go down these escape routes.
Yeah.
And then you go down.
I'm gonna act like I have experience in mines. Cool. Like, yeah, of course, the escape
route. me and Chuck Liddell fought down there.
Hate it when. Yeah. Nothing worse than a broken hoist.
So you go down these tunnels, thousands of feet, and you go like 20 foot lengths on this wooden ladder, 20 foot, and you cross over, and we get to one. You're about to get down, you feel yourself leaning out towards the middle. They're all these 50 year old ladders or whatever.
Fuck.
And so the guy who went down, he had a job with a seasoned miner, and the guy kind of had a panic attack the first day. And Dad goes, tells the guy, well, it was a summer break. Well, Keith will do it, maybe. And so he calls me on the phone. He's all, hey, are you afraid of heights? Like, he doesn't know I'm afraid. Are you afraid of heights? And I was like, no. He's like, well, you'll find out pretty damn quick.
Looking
into the black abyss.
Yeah. And then so the first time we went down, you put these little catches on your belt that, like, if you go down real, like a seatbelt, it'll catch you so you don't fall in.
Yeah.
And like, hey, you can work. We're working the mine for about a week or two until finally we're going to go down there and do the thing and explore and do all that. And he's like, well, you can use one of those things, the catch-alls or whatever you call them. And like, do you do that? He's like, oh, no, real miners don't do that shit. Okay, no, I don't need one.
It's hilarious. Yeah.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
What?
But it's like snowboarders or skateboarders. Yeah. They never wore helmets. You were a pussy if you wore a helmet in the 90s. It was like that.
Hold on.
It's a different
world. I'm not going to say it's like snowboard. You're in a fucking mine.
Yeah.
That's not snowboard. Yeah. Snowboarding, at least, like, you're on a mountaintop. People can fly in.
I don't disagree.
Whoa.
But anyway, back to my dad. He's super dry. He doesn't understand like how my paychecks come. Whenever I say I'm doing something, well, does it pay? Like,
right.
Like, he doesn't understand.
Right.
You know? Like, because we're all living on a dream. Like, money doesn't even mean anything. This movie's going to come out. I might make some money. I might not make some money. It's all just a dream and money's not real and all that. And to come from the world where it's your paycheck every double week.
And, right.
He comes to the sets though, right? Like, when we're shooting something. And he's like in awe. I don't know what's in his mind, but he's like in awe of it all. And it's like, he's like, I guess this is a thing that's really happening. And other people seem to think that it matters. And so here's my son doing this thing.
Oh, he's proud.
It's really fucking
cool. He's proud.
It's so cool.
Literally grew up in cabins with dirt floors. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, Montana. That's incredible. Yeah, I mean, that. No, trust me. That guy, his mind is blown, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, okay, let's get back to the movie. How much time do we have, by the way? Are we good on time? I don't want these guys to be late.
11:27.
Got it. I'm just curious. Sorry if you can't answer this right away.
Please.
How many times did the actors in there die in your movie? Like, how many death scenes did actors have to do over and over and over again?
A lot. Shit, I don't know. A lot. In the script, the day happened like 106 times or something like that.
Oh my God. Yeah, yeah. So they had to go through like 106 moments of like, cause
set up, clean up, all the blood. I mean, you think about that, the reset and all that, right?
Yeah, it was.
Wardrobe, everything.
It was really something. Here's the interesting thing about that, since you know production. When I first had my line producer, he put together the schedule, and we only have 12 nights to do this. And they're long nights, are 5 p.m. to 5 a.m. kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, here's your schedule. It was like 11, 12 pages a day. I've never seen anybody do it before, but here you go, right?
Oh, my God.
Like, no solution, nothing, right? and like, so.
Fuck.
People are doing 5 pages a day and feel like, oh, we killed it. We got 5 pages today, right?
It's no.
Like,
yeah. You got to do more.
So I'm shooting outside at the same time I'm shooting inside, and I'm doing all kinds. I'm block shooting where, like, I'll set up. Say we're shooting you. Like, you're Brendan Fair. We got to talk about him at some point. He's freaking amazing.
Okay.
But, like, I'm shooting your scene right now. All the cameras, all the lighting set up to shoot you. So I'll shoot 2, maybe even 3 scenes this way, different scenes, and then turn it around and shoot the different scenes with me and Tate.
Dude.
And so him to be able to like, okay, on this scene, my energy's here. On this scene's my energy here, and memorize the lines and be able to go through and spit and do all the things. Like, it was just like, it was really something.
No, man. Actors freak me out.
We never made a single day, by the way.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I mean, even the last day.
Did you go over? You didn't go over?
No, like that's the thing. That's what I'm proud of as a writer director is like you get to points where like one of my favorite scenes came out by this is like, okay, there's a scene that we really need to connect these things, right? And on the outside, and we're just not going to be able to get that. We're not going to be good at it. We're set up the cameras this way. So let's just make up this entire other scene that'll make that bridge happen. And then like just on the fly. And Brendan, we're going to have to ad-lib this scene and make some stuff up and just things like
that. Did it work?
Oh, yeah. It's my favorite scene in the movie now.
Wow. Dude, that's crazy.
To be able to do that on the fly and all the pressure. And, like, talk about imposter syndrome, too, right? We talk about this, man. Like, one of the famous directors was saying that the hardest part about directing is getting out of your car in the morning.
But, yeah, I've heard that.
But it's Kubrick, I think. But it's so goddamn true. Like, I get to my car, and the crew's already there, everything's set up, and talk about imposter syndrome. Like, I go out and do this thing. Oh, my God, I got all this money, people's money. This is my chance. And at my age, you know, if this movie flops, like, right, like I'm not a college kid. I'm not going to be like, I got 10 years to rebrand myself. You know what I mean? Like, this is now.
Well, I mean, so, yeah, like, you didn't go to film school. Like, that's the thing is, like, directing is – it's the most intense, hyper-pressured job. And you have to, the best way I heard it described is like, it's like running a pirate ship. Like you basically like, you have to be able to manage all these different personalities and keep everything harmonious and deal with all these fires that keep breaking out.
And let people go.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's that.
And there's, you're a writer too, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I write. Yes.
So when you write scripts, there's always this point, so like what transition. I'm always talking about transitions because that's hard. Like, you write scenes, you got to piece them together and make it work, right? Like, so going from one scene to another, like, you know, there's like a whole little problem with your script, and you write this little filler and it'll work, and then you get on the day, like, oh, we're shooting this, and like, and then all of a sudden, like, everyone's ask you a question and it's a problem and everybody's staring at you, the grips, the light, the electrician's lighter, and like it's super quiet and like you don't really know the answer. It's like, no, you're the leader, right? You can't act like the guy, yeah, this is the answer. We're going to do this, 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 and you set up over there and do that.
Yeah.
And like, God damn, I hope that's the right answer because I just punched it out my ass.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's actually parenting too. There's a lot of, there's a lot of that. Like, you kind of have to act like you know. Yeah. And that's a lot of things. But when you've got the extra burden of, you know, I don't know how much money you're burning every 5 minutes, but it's a lot of money. Yeah. Every five, you're just burning money. So you can't fuck up that many times. And it's people's jobs, people's lives. It's your life. Because if it doesn't look good, if it comes out weird, then
the actors trusted you to make them look good. And they're trusted you with this part of their life. Like yeah, I can make him look like an idiot and like ruin his career. You know what I mean?
And the demeanor that he comes with is like, there's a lot of different, I mean, there's people that are screamers. And so, like, you want to get a best result of somebody. How is it that my demeanor, regardless of the pressure that I'm under, it doesn't matter to the guy that's in front of me what kind of pressure I'm under. I have to – and watching him walk through that was amazing.
That's the best part of it because you're an actor and you're working with other actors. And they're not really doing – like, it's just not right what they're doing. I'm not talking about anything specific. Just, like, it's just not really working.
Yeah. Yet.
But you know how they're struggling. They're doing their best to give you the best, and they're doing everything. And like, how do you have a conversation with them? Okay, well, and how do you get it out of them and figure it out together what we need to make this scene work?
Yeah,
And I just that's addictive, man. I love that.
Because you say the wrong thing.
Oh yeah.
And they're gonna spin out, and then it's gonna get worse.
Yeah.
You Kubrick. Speaking of Kubrick, he was the Hannibal Lecter of this shit. Like supposedly he would get in your head.
Yeah.
You've seen that documentary on The Shining, what he did to Shelley Duvall.
Yeah.
But he would become really connected with the actors, and they thought he was their friend. He never talked to you again, but he was just merging with your mind.
It's beautiful.
It's crazy.
Me and Brendan had this, like, Brendan Fair, by the way, is just like, he's able to do what I'm like this is going to be a breakout role for him. Like, he doesn't need to be a breakout. He's a world-class actor, but he's in almost every fucking scene, and it's just a twisted, tortured thing. And what he does, and what I'm proud of in the script is, I make you fall in love and root for this really bad person.
Cool.
And he's able to pull this off, man.
Wow.
It's really amazing. He's just so charismatic and all that. And
wow.
Yeah. And we developed this language working with him. It was like, you know, you never do readings for actors. You're not supposed to do that, right?
Like, right, no.
Like, yeah, like...
line reads.
Like, I'm saying the line the way I want you to say
it. Yeah.
But I don't really know how to communicate that well. So we just learned, like, I would just do really bad readings like this and, like, series of grunts and, you know, the way I talk. I'm not really loquacious, right?
Yeah.
And, yep, got it. We'll get it. Let's go.
That's cool.
And it was
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was great, man.
Yeah, I don't know if it's all, like, yeah, definitely some actors get super butthurt if you do a line reading for them. Have you ever heard the William Shatner, when someone did a line reading for William Shatner?
I heard this. I forgot, though.
Can you pull that up? It's amazing. William Shatner tortures this motherfucker who, like, God help him, gave William Shatner a line read. William Shatner given a line reading. I think it was a commercial. Let's see if we can find this.
Oh, yeah, I did see this commercial.
Let's just play a clip of this. This is what you don't want to happen on set.
It's amazing.
In a recording session. Just so great. It really goes on a while.
Maybe jump ahead a little bit.
It's just
he'll
be on set. You'll see him in the studio.
I love it.
Okay. Oh, it's not footage.
No. No. Go to
animated would be funny.
Where do you see animated?
Is up.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
I'll just play the Stern one and we can jump to
minutes. Yeah, yeah.
Just jump in the middle, Val.
Is that the way you'd like me to do it? Okay.
Wait, go back a little bit, Val. We can cut into this.
Oh, why don't you just come up here?
You'll be amazed at what you hear.
Oh. Is that the way you'd like me to do it? Okay. I'll do it that way. Okay.
No, keep playing, Val.
Ready. This is William Shatner, and I would like to invite you to take a journey with me into the 21st century. So take the next few minutes and listen very closely. You'll be amazed at what you hear. Okay, so I think that came pretty close.
Okay, you can stop. Yeah, don't do that. Like, people get pissed, but I think some awesome actors... it's not just like it's a one-way street like that. Surely he knew this was like a first-time directing for you. He's probably working with you too.
Yeah, he absolutely did, man. And we worked together too. And it's like I said before, it's like we're in this together, man. We signed up for this thing, and like he studied for months beforehand. Like, and he went really, it's kind of cliche, but he kind of went really one method on it. Like his wife was kind of worried about him a little bit.
No, one of my friends is in a movie, and he's a comic, my friend Johnny. And I remember he was coming on the road with me, and he just finished this movie. And it's like the character was on him. Like, right. It was hanging on him, this thing that he'd become.
Yeah. That was it.
I was worried about him. Yeah. Like, it wasn't healthy. Yeah. Like, it made me feel like, damn, this stuff can... drive you insane.
I can tell you about the set too, and it was this set again, like it really was Groundhog's Day. We're back at this diner again doing the thing, the same characters in the diner and all that stuff, and here we are again and
shooting night, so you are in a different world.
Yeah, exactly.
In a way you're in an altered reality.
Yeah,
you get like you have no life. You do like a 12-hour night, you go to sleep, whatever, you study your lines, you go back to work. That's a life, and like we're in this thing together. And so it was like by the end, like we could just see like the fatigue that you see on people's faces. It was real. But Tate was our shining guide there, man. Cheesecake Tate.
What do you mean?
I was like, well, the littlest I could do is maybe help morale. And so every day about 2 or 3 in the morning, I'd break out these cheesecakes and whipped cream and stuff and be like, it's cheesecake time. And then everybody would have a bunch of cheesecake and then we'd go on and bang out the last few hours.
It was so fun, man.
Yeah, it was great.
And that's what Brandon said too. And I take a lot of this. This warms my heart so much. He said, I posted a thing the other day and he said on it, like, I've been working 30 years or whatever, and this is the most fun I ever had on a show.
Oh, cool.
And like, and the cast and the crew members saying that to me too, because everybody sacrificed and they didn't get paid what they normally get paid, all the things like that too. And people before this shoot, they were saying, dude, if you drive them like this, like your crew's going to revolt, you know? And you're talking about being the leader of the pirate ship.
Yeah. Right?
And like, you trust me, they're not going to revolt. Like, I just kind of have faith in these people and all that. And we did the short together before, and they're going to revolt, and you can't push a crew this hard. And by God, man, they showed up every day, super eager, super willing, and it was so much fun. And as a result of that, we finished on Thursday morning, on Friday morning at 5 a.m. And then Darren was having an after party. No crew goes to after party, rap parties, right? Because they've done $50 million movies. They don't care, whatever.
Right.
And they're not going to show up in a couple hours to a rap party.
Right.
Everybody showed up.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Man, I got to tell you, though. I think, like, when you're shooting a horror movie versus other movies, like, I don't know, man. This is going to make me sound like a real dummy, but I would get creeped out that you're going to call in some dark fucking spirits or something. You know, I've heard stories of like, we've heard these stories. Twilight Zone, that little girl gets her decapitated by a helicopter.
Poltergeist.
Fucking poltergeist. Like a lot of people, like some kind of like other thing comes in. The Exorcist.
Seven? And then what was the one with Nicolas Cage? 8mm. Like that was another real dark movie. And like guys that worked on that are like, I got to move away from this. I can't do
Yeah. Because you're invoking something. Did you ever have that vibe of like, shit, man, something else has come into the room?
No, there was definitely an energy though.
We had actual real live crackheads and stuff walking around. Yeah, so we had actual things that were
I think one of them made the cut. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. Really?
We got a bogey walking down the street.
Dude, I mean,
we got
to
shoot.
What do you have to Taft Hartley then? Do they have to get in the sack now? How does that work? Yeah. Oh man, listen, I'm so excited for this movie. And congratulations. I have a feeling this isn't going to be your first directing job.
Thanks,
Ryan. And I'm really looking forward to it. When does it come out?
August 8th.
August 8th.
In theaters and wherever you rent movies, Apple, Amazon, all that.
Hell yes.
It's cool. We'll be doing premieres in L.A. and then in New York and a few other cities coming up.
And like what we were talking before, like it's like this is just like the fighting on thing. This is like what we're doing right now. Like this is the process. This is what I've worked for all these years. All the years of suffering and all the years of whatever to come to this moment, and everything's hinging on this, like this, and this podcast, this right here, this is the moment, this is the process. It's not like the movie's released on the 8th and whew, we're done right. And it's great, you know, like, no, I'm this is it. They're going on the podcast and going on the premieres and being in a theater watching people watch my movie, man, like there's no fight that can compare with that. People laughing and people reacting to what you did.
I think too, this thing that's cool, this idea, and you as a father, like this overstanding that like when your kid goes into a grappling tournament, like it doesn't matter. This is a beta test for the next tournament.
You'll do.
You're building your legs to be better later.
Right.
But you can't think that on the day. It has to be the most important thing that you're doing on that day. You know, and so there's this thing where it doesn't matter at all and it's infinitely important all at once, you know? And that's a cool spot to live in, you know?
Seek death! You guys are the best. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Love you, Duncan. Love you too. Thank you. Cheers. That was Tate Fletcher and Keith Jardine. Do stream, download, buy, Kill Me Again. Let's keep good movies making money so they keep coming. I want to thank all of our sponsors. And I want to thank you for listening or watching. I love you. I'll see you next week.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Okay, only 10 more presents to wrap. You're almost at the finish line. But first, there, the last one. Enjoy a Coca-Cola for a pause that refreshes.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.